There's one thing I see people do over and over again to mess up a good relationship. They try to prevent the other person from being themselves. When you don't like the way someone shows up in a relationship and you try to change what you don't like, you end up causing them to bury love and connection toward you. You definitely don't want this to happen. I talk about this and more in the powerful and often life-changing program I call Healed Being. If you're having difficulty letting someone be themselves around you, sign up for the first 4 lessons for free, no credit card required, over at healedbeing.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges using emotional intelligence and critical thinking without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. Welcome to the show. I'm so glad you are here. I'm going to get right into the first topic today. It's a good one. I actually haven't given it too much thought because I want to kind of think about this in real time. So this person wrote, "Dear Paul, I love your show and your topics. I am near 70. I'm 69 years old, and it's like I've stumbled upon a gold mine of stuff all about me. My question seems small. My parents ingrained in me that one says thank you when given a favor or a gift. When I don't receive a thank you, I judge the receiver as shallow and lacking gratitude, and it leaves me with a bitter and unappreciated feeling. Where do I put these values and beliefs? How do I downgrade my expectations in these exchanges?" And then she signed her name. All right. I'm going to not thank you. I'm pushing you. I'm pushing a button. I'm not going to thank you for sending that. Now you might be wondering, why are you doing this? I'm not thanking you because I want you to go there for a moment. You might think, well, you read it on the air. There's a somewhat sense of appreciation there because you read it on the air. You're giving my message attention. That's true. I'm giving it attention. And you're also providing content for your show. That's true, too. You could be grateful for that, Paul. That's true. I could be. And I am. I'm grateful for that. But let's just say that I received this message and I said, oh, what's this? All right. That's great. Anyway, next message. Where do you go with that? Anyone that's listening that has this issue, where do you go with it? I'm going to guess a lot of us have this issue. Where do I go with this when somebody doesn't thank me? Like, I hold open the door for someone and they walk through and they don't thank me. Where do I go? Not a big deal. I just think, well, that's normal. This is common courtesy, and a lot of people do this for each other, and they're probably just used to it. They just walk through the door, and maybe they hold the door for someone else, and I walk through that door, and I don't thank them later. I normally will. But maybe I didn't. Maybe I just wasn't thinking. Maybe I was just in my own space. So there are times like that where you will be in your own space, and you will just simply not remember or not be aware about thanking somebody for what they did. How about if I give someone a gift? Now, this is where this person who wrote, this is probably where she is. I just gave them a gift. How come they're not grateful? Well, let me explore this. What if they didn't like the gift? Yeah, but it's still common courtesy to say thank you. I'm with you. I hear you. I am all about that. Even if somebody gave me a gift, I loathed. What am I going to do with this? This is awful. I can't put this on my dining room table. This looks terrible, I'm thinking in my head, of course. Do I thank them? I do. Thank you so much. This is wonderful. I appreciate this. That's so thoughtful. I'm so grateful for that. Thank you. And then maybe when they come over, I'll take it out of the closet, put it on the dining room table, and they'll see how grateful I am for their gift. That's a little deceptive, a little manipulative, and thankfully I don't have anyone in my life that actually does that. I think they know me well enough that they're not going to get me, I don't know, a naked statue for my dining room table. So not that I have anything against that, but it just doesn't fit our house. So I would still be grateful, though, because they took the time. They took the time to go out and they thought of me. That's amazing. Somebody thinking of me, of all the people they could be thinking about, they thought of me. That is a wonderful gesture and a wonderful thing they did while they were out thinking of me. And then they spent money on me. That's incredible. So I have a lot to be grateful for, even when I get a terrible gift. And I shouldn't even call it a terrible gift. It was a very thoughtful gift. They didn't get it right. They didn't match my personality. I don't know, but it's hard. I mean, there are things that I get for my girl, or I want to get for my girlfriend, and I'll go, oh, I wonder if she'll like this. But before I buy it, often I will show her, hey, do you like this? Because I don't want to get it wrong. And she'll look at it and go, yeah, they're all right. And then I'm thinking, I just dodged a bullet. I'm so glad I didn't get that. I have no idea what your taste in jewelry is, because every time I show you something that I think you'll like, you don't like it. And then she'll show me something that she likes, and I'll think, that's not you. I like it on you, but the other stuff you wear doesn't match that. So she has a very eclectic taste, so I can't get it right. So that's why gift giving is a very logical process for me. I have to test it in advance, and then I'll buy her the gift. It's still a surprise. It's just a different kind of surprise. Anyway, back to the gratitude, the appreciation, the gratefulness, and the thank you that this person wrote about. If somebody doesn't say thank you, I'm going to try this on. If somebody doesn't say thank you to me, I give them a gift and they don't say thank you. And actually this happened not too long ago, now that I'm doing this in real time. I bought someone dinner. They went to reach for their credit card. I reached for mine and say, hey, I would like to purchase. Please allow me to purchase. You know, I just handed my credit card over. And they're looking over the bill and they take my credit card and they hand it to the waiter and that was it. And I didn't receive a thank you. And I thought, well, that's interesting. But my act was the gift, not the reception or the thank you of that gift. My wanting to give them a gift is the gift. I believe in giving gifts with no strings attached. However, there's always that little voice inside me that wonders why they weren't grateful or didn't say thank you. But that's me. That's me thinking that if I received it, I would say thank you. And so I'm definitely aware that I am expecting other people to act like me. I'm aware of that. And it's important to be aware of that. Other people do not act like you at all. We all have different histories, different experiences, different references, different relationships, different upbringings, different teachings, a lot of differences in our lives. And so someone like me, who used to be a people pleaser, thank you is going to come easy. Other people, it doesn't come so easily. Some other people might feel very vulnerable saying thank you. Some other people might have been abused when they were grateful. In fact, a lot of abusive relationships are like that. It's very hard to feel love and gratitude when you're not sure where the next brick is coming from and when. You're not sure if they're going to throw that proverbial brick at you again, because one day you're happy and everything's going well, but the next day they're awful to you and you don't know how to handle it and it's painful. So emotionally abusive relationships will do that. They will put you in an up and down state, a state of constant being on guard. You're always on guard. Even during the best days or best weeks, a week could go by, but there's still a part of you that's on guard. So saying thank you can be a very vulnerable space for some people. Saying thank you means different things to different people as well. Does thank you mean I like the gift? Maybe I was brought up, you know, this person who was receiving a gift who didn't say thank you, this person who wrote, maybe they were brought up to be honest. And when you say thank you, that meant you like the gift. If you didn't like the gift, you didn't say thank you. It could be just an upbringing thing. Could be conditioning, like I was saying with the relationships. If you're in a relationship where being grateful and appreciating what you have was met with abuse the next day, then it's going to be hard to get into that space. Like, you want to feel that space. It's like, I want to be in love. I want to feel the loving feeling, but I can't. I can't go there 100%. I can get there 75%, but I have to keep this 25% as my protection. I have to keep this buffer between us because I need to feel protected because I know this is going to happen again, or I believe what they did before is going to happen again, and I don't want to feel that pain. So I need some reserve. I need some energy in my reserves. So I won't be 100%. That may be it too. And somebody may actually be grateful, but don't say the words, thank you. In fact, the dinner I was talking about, I bought that person dinner. Later on, at the end of the night, because we hung out for a while, he looked at me and he said, thank you so much. Thank you for buying that dinner. That was a very nice gesture. And so that thank you came later. And so I had maybe tiny, tiny feelings about what happened, but I let them go because I know who they are. I know who that person is. And of course, in my mind, if I trust that that person has always been honest with me and they're a good friend or good family member, good relative, you know, family, relative, partner, if they're always nice in other ways, then them not saying thank you doesn't mean they're not grateful. I have just assumed that because we have a good relationship, that thank you isn't necessary. I have put that out there. I have decided that even when I don't get a thank you from someone I love, trust, care about in many ways, and are a part of my life, even when I don't receive a thank you from them, it's still okay because I love, trust, care about, and they are a part of my life. I care about them. I'm so happy that they're in my life, that is, in my opinion, the gratitude I'm looking for. So when someone spends time with me, I'm grateful, and I see them as being grateful for being with me. Like, they are grateful for my company too. So giving a gift, I shouldn't have to seek that gratitude. I shouldn't have to look for that thank you. It's always nice to get. But not all of us were raised the same way. And my friend, he said thank you later. And I think it's important to remember that some people say thank you differently and show gratitude differently and have a different idea of what gratitude looks like. And it has been very helpful for me to see my friends, the family that I love, the people I care about in my life. It's been so helpful for me as a former people pleaser that always seeks the gratitude and appreciation, or at least used to. I always want to know that they're grateful because that means I'm liked. That means they care about me, but I don't see that anymore. I don't make that connection anymore. If they don't say thank you, that doesn't mean they don't like me. If they don't say thank you, that doesn't mean they don't care about what happened or the gift they gave them or whatever. I used to seek that. I used to seek that from people. Now I don't. What I seek now is the rest of the big picture. Or I should say the big picture in general. The big picture is, how are they the rest of the time? If they don't act in a way that is connecting and loving and supportive toward me, maybe they're showing up in ways that I don't appreciate. And if that's the case, maybe I have them in my life and I'm looking for something that isn't there. Like, why would I want them in my life if there are other components of the relationship that I find unappealing or even toxic? Do they make me feel bad in other ways? And them not saying thank you is kind of like the cherry on top that really brings it home. It drives it home that the relationship isn't as great as it could have been anyway. And I'm looking for that thank you to maybe make up for where they lack or where what they've not done that they should have done. You know, things like that. Those are the questions that go through my mind when somebody says, you know, I'm looking for that thank you. And I feel maybe some resentment if they don't thank me, or I feel like they're shallow, like this person said. And it's possible they are. If they're showing up in that way in other areas of your life, it's possible. And coming back to this person, she said she feels bitter and underappreciated. So she's looking for that sense of worth, perhaps. I'm talking to you, the person who wrote, you're probably looking for a sense of worth. Like you feel worthy by giving somebody something, and that is your way of receiving worth. Now, you may have known this. I'm looking for this. I don't want this value or belief or whatever it is. I don't want this, so what do I do? That's why you're writing. That's probably what you're asking. What do I do? I don't want to feel this way. If it's about worth, you know, you're looking for worth, then I do, A, ask you to look at the big picture. How else are they showing up in your life? And is your life more fulfilling with them in it, or is it not? Is it less fulfilling, or is it something else? I think it's important to establish how you feel with them at all other times, because you want to make sure that the rest of it's good. Secondly, B, is how do they receive in general? Do they always say thank you to everyone else but you? That might be suspect. What's going on there? So I would look at that too. How else do they receive? How else are they grateful? For example, my friend who didn't thank me immediately about the dinner, and I would have been okay if he never thanked me, he's a low-key guy. He's a low-key guy, and he doesn't have like this huge extroverted personality. He keeps to himself when he thinks he doesn't need to say anything, and just low-key in many ways, and I realize that's his personality. So I can't look at somebody and say, I want you to be more extroverted, or I want you to be more like me when it comes to receiving gifts. Because doing that is expecting something that somebody is almost incapable of doing. Now, it doesn't mean he's incapable of being grateful and saying thank you. It just means his mind operates differently than mine and everyone else's, just like everyone's mind operates differently than everyone else's. Doesn't mean they're not grateful. Doesn't mean they forgot to say thank you. Maybe they did. It doesn't mean anything until it means something to you. And that's what I'm saying here, is that sometimes we look at things that we tend to think that are against us. Like this thing that just happened must be against me. When in reality, it could be their own processing and how they do things. And when it is their own processing and how they do things, which is always the case, then can we not take it personally? And this is the challenge, right? Somebody does something or says something and they're going through their own thing. Doesn't matter. Just they're processing something, or this is how they operate. And how can we understand that someone's process may not match our expectations? And so that's where I go with this. It's like some people's processes don't match our expectations. And can we be okay with that? And the person who wrote, she's saying, where can I put this, this bitterness, this resentment? Again, you look at the relationship as a whole. Does that person show up in other ways that make you feel good? Are they grateful in other ways? Do they gift you later? Like if you buy them dinner and they don't say thank you, but a week later they buy you dinner and you're probably thanking them up and down. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Or maybe you go overboard and say, no, you don't have to pay. I'll be okay. Don't buy. No problem. I can afford this too. You know, you don't have to say any of that stuff. You can just say, thank you so much. Or you might just give them a look and a smile. Aw, that was very sweet of you. That could be you. That could be you thanking them and you expect the same in return. So when you have this kind of relationship where it is reciprocal, it creates a balance. That kind of relationship creates a balance. There is not often a need for thank yous for some people. Some people want it. Some people need it. Maybe you need it. Absolutely. But some people have a good balanced relationship where everything else just seems to work out great. And there's no need to thank someone, even though it is common courtesy. But we're not all the same. And so that person may not show you their gratitude with the words, thank you. Maybe they show it in other ways. And this is something else I really want you to look for, is in what other ways do they show their gratitude? I could tell you, yes, I could tell you where to put your values and beliefs and your thoughts like this. But that involves you understanding and believing that you're all that. It involves you believing that you're great and that you deserve to be thanked, even when someone doesn't thank you. But it's not because they're not grateful. And it's not because you're anything less than all of who you are, meaning you are a good person, you're lovable, you're worthy, you're significant, and you deserve to get credit. You deserve to be thanked. And when you're not, it's not a reflection of you. It's just a reflection of their operation, how they operate, how they process things, and how they do things. But I do like to zoom out, look at the big picture, and make sure that everything else is in balance. Because sometimes it's not. Sometimes you're with someone and you're thinking, wow, that was not very nice of them to not be thankful and not be grateful. Where else does that happen? Or at least where do you get that feeling with them in other parts of the relationship? Or is it only when you give something and expect something in return? Because my belief about gift giving is the same belief I have, or at least the same philosophy when it comes to apologizing. I believe in doing both of them with no strings attached. When you apologize to someone, don't expect them to say, I forgive you, or it's okay. Apologizing is a gift. You give it to them, and they may not accept that gift, but that's not on you. That's on them. They can choose to accept that gift or not. And a gift is kind of pushing it, but an apology is something that you do when you've wronged somebody, or you believe you've wronged somebody, and you express this vulnerable space inside of you, and you apologize, but you should not say, are you okay with this? Is my apology enough? Will you forgive me? Because those are strings attached. That means that you have an agenda. I'm giving you this apology and I expect something in return, which means it's not really an apology at all. It's just something that you want to heal yourself of or free yourself of. You want to free yourself of guilt or something like that. But that is not what apologies should be for. They should be for to let the other person know that you really do feel bad. And I'm expressing this to you. I feel really bad and I'm so sorry. And then walk away from it. If they choose to say something about it, great. If they choose to not say something about it, great. You have done your part. This is like I was saying in an episode or two ago, you just serve the ball and it's on their side. If they want to serve it back, great. Now you have maybe a conversation or maybe a connection again that you can become close again. Same thing with gift giving. I'm giving you this gift because it's from my heart and I really think that you would like it. I might be wrong, but this is something that I thought of that I really want to give you selflessly and hope that you like it. Enjoy. That's it. And you don't ask, do you like it? Because now you're expecting something in return. It does show another person that, or at least it makes them feel obligated to respond to you. It's a tough place to be if you are not the kind of person that likes to just say thank you so much and be expressive like that. Some people aren't as expressive, so they may not say the things that you want to say. But gift giving should be an unconditional, no strings attached act. And the same thing with what you're saying is like, oh, they didn't say thank you. Well, was it a gift? Is what you gave them a gift? Because if it was, and you have strings attached, then you gave it for, I hate to say this, maybe a selfish purpose. If you were selfish in your giving, then it wasn't really giving. It was a means to an end. And that means, or at least that end, is something that you wanted from the exchange or from the gift giving, instead of giving from your heart in a selfless way, where all you cared about was their happiness, not filling your sense of worth or fear, you know, trying to assuage a fear, something like that. And when that happens, when you give selflessly, then you are more likely to see the gratefulness and the appreciation in other people, even when they don't say it. When you are giving from a place of fear or a place of lack, like you need something in return, then they're likely to feel it. And that may affect or alter the relationship. And so there's a lot of things we can talk about in this zone, this area, but this is where I go with it. And let me see if I can answer your question. What can I do with these beliefs, these values? I think you have to focus on who made you feel unworthy and why you still feel that way today. That's not the only place, but this is where I would start. Who made you feel unworthy? Who made you feel like you weren't great? Why do you feel this way today? Do you feel like you're not showing up in a good way? Do you feel like you're not a healthy person, you know, mentally, emotionally? Do you feel like you are a toxic person? Do you feel like you could do things better? Some people believe they can never do good enough. I can never do good enough. Well, my question for people like that is, when will you know you're good enough? What has to be present for you to know that you're good enough? Because a lot of us don't have criteria. A lot of us do not put out the criteria and say, I need to meet and match this criteria in order to know that I'm good enough, that I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. You know where I'm going with that. If you don't, then that's an old skit, Saturday Night Live. This is what happens, though. This is what we put out there. We think that we're not good enough, or we're not smart enough, or we're not pretty enough, or attractive enough. What's your criteria? You know, it's easier with physical stuff. I need to lose weight. I need to gain weight. I need to dye my hair, whatever. It's easier to look at that criteria. And that's a whole nother episode, you know, the physical insecurities that we have. But there's a lot of insecurities that we have that we shouldn't have, that we do. I've had a lot. But the insecurities that we carry around with us, like, I'm not smart enough. I'm not good enough. I'm not lovable. Or lovable by someone else's standards. What standards are they? What is the criteria? How will you know when you are enough? That is an important question, and you need to know the criteria, because if you have no criteria, it's a never-ending struggle. I will never know if I'm good enough because I don't know what good enough means. Yikes. That's pretty much where I go with that. It's like, if you don't know what makes you good enough or lovable or smart enough, if you don't know what the criteria is and you're not checking boxes off, then it is a constant strive for something that is unreachable. A constant strive for the unreachable because you haven't defined it. So make sure you define what makes you worthy enough. And I will tell you this, you're already there. You're already there. You're already worthy enough. And if people don't see you as worthy, they don't see you. And that's okay too, because everyone operates differently. They all have their own ideas and perceptions and beliefs and values. They're on a different plane of existence. Everyone that you know is on a different plane of existence. And we can't assume that everyone thinks like us and acts like us. Just like, again, back to emotionally abusive relationships. The victim of emotional abuse is usually kind and caring and sympathetic and empathetic and supportive of their partners and or anyone that's emotionally abusing. They're usually caring. And so they expect the same actions and the same behaviors from the person that's abusing them. And when they don't get those behaviors, they can't believe that person can be that way. How can that person say those words to me? That's so hurtful. Because I would never say those words. So therefore, I can't believe that somebody else would say those words. And that's where we fault sometimes. That's where we can be in fault, where we can't believe somebody could do something that we didn't do. But they can. Often it happens. In fact, all the time. That person's doing this. Why can't they do that instead? Why can't they be like me? Why can't they show their kindness or compassion? They don't know how. They don't know what to do differently. Or, you know, whatever. They may know how, but they don't want to. They may just be a hurtful person. They may not be. They may just mess up. They may just get angry. All kinds of things. But they're different than us, unfortunately. I want you to be like me. I want you to be like me. I want you to be like me. You might look at all these people and ask yourself, why don't they say thank you to me? To this person who wrote, just make sure that you're addressing your own self-worth, because you need to understand that you're already worthy, you're already important, you're already significant, you're already all that, and you don't need anyone else to tell you that. And when somebody doesn't say thank you, it's not a reflection of you, it's just a reflection of how they operate. It could mean they're rude. Who knows? It could mean they don't like you. That's going to hurt. But why are these people in your life anyway? And it also could mean that they are grateful in other ways that you haven't noticed or haven't understood. You haven't put the cause and effect together. Like A equals this, A equals B, A equals C. A, meaning the gift that I just gave, equals B, a thank you. That could be your hard-coded belief that everyone says thank you when they receive a gift. But sometimes A equals C. A equals C. A is the gift, and C is the reciprocation or the thankfulness or the gratitude or the appreciation in some other way, shape, or form. I'm grateful just for some people existing in my life. Wow, you show up for me? Wow, you called me out of anyone that you could have called and talked to me? You could spend your life, like my girlfriend, you could spend your life with anyone in the world, and you chose me? That is mind-blowing. Anyone you could have chosen in the world, and you chose me. That just blows my mind. And when I think about it, it really hits my heart hard in a good way. It's like, wow, that is so humbling. And she could spend her time with anyone. So look for those things in your relationship with another person when they're not showing up in a way that you would rather they show up in. If you would rather them be grateful right away, they may not be able to do that for you, but do they do it in other ways? And definitely remember that you are worthy and lovable and significant already, and you don't need anyone else to tell you that, but I get it. We do. Sometimes we are working on this stuff, and sometimes we don't feel that way, and it's always nice to hear, believe me, but remember, sometimes we look for those quick highs because we are seeking them. Like if somebody says thank you when we give a gift, we might be seeking that as a quick high so that we feel good about ourselves right now. But what happens when that wears off? Now we have to fulfill ourselves again by giving another gift, looking for that thank you, and then we get another quick high. And so we're going to disappoint ourselves. We're going to put ourselves in positions that will make us feel bad. Because when we don't receive the thank you that we set up, we hope they say thank you. We set this up, so we give them a gift, and we hope they say thank you in return. When we don't get that, it's because we've set ourselves up to look for that high, and we didn't get it. So now we are disappointed, and we feel rejected and defeated. And let me just give you this, you know, as you move forward, I want you to practice giving gifts and practice doing things without waiting for the thank you, without seeking it. Might be difficult, but practice it. And the more you practice it, the more you're going to feel okay giving without strings attached. And you may not be doing that on purpose. I'm not saying that you're purposely looking for gratitude and appreciation, but there's probably something running in the background, some sort of unconscious program that is telling you that your worth is defined by someone else's gratitude or appreciation. And in order to reprogram that, you just have to repeat certain behaviors over and over again. It's sort of like exposure therapy. Just repeat those behaviors over and over again, not seeking thank yous. Like give with the intent of not getting a thank you. And what you'll probably find is that more people say thank you than you expect, and it'll probably fill your cup. It'll runneth over. And even if they don't, though, even if you're not getting these thank yous, you're conditioning yourself to be okay with it and also getting into the spirit of giving without looking for something in return. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying you're doing that on purpose, but it will be helpful to rewire yourself so that when you don't get a thank you and you don't see someone's gratitude, that the good feeling that you get will come from inside, not from outside of you. And so that's my homework for you. I really hope this, at least all this stuff I talked about in this segment, is helpful to you. And I appreciate you letting me think this through in real time as I share this with you, because I didn't prepare anything for this segment. So some people might have gotten bored and fast forwarded, but let's hope that something hit the target. Thank you so much for writing. Now I can thank you. I appreciate you. I am grateful for you. And I do thank you for writing in. And it was a great question. We'll be right back after this. And speaking of gratitude, I want to thank BetterHelp, our sponsor today. I think that it is important to remember that BetterHelp is there for you too. They are doing something that I no longer do, which is help one-on-one. I used to do one-on-one coaching, but BetterHelp Online Therapy, they are phenomenal. They have a phenomenal service. I've talked to two or three of their therapists, and boy, they offer a way to navigate life's challenges. So if you are feeling unsure, insecure, unworthy, unlovable, BetterHelp can help you feel better inside. They are therapists that are trained to help you figure out the cause of challenging emotions and help you learn productive coping skills. BetterHelp has matched 3 million people with professionally licensed and vetted therapists available 100% online. Plus, it's affordable. You just fill out a brief questionnaire and you'll be matched with a therapist in no time. And if things aren't clicking, you can easily switch to a new therapist anytime. Visit betterhelp.com/brain. You'll get 10% off your first month if you go to BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/brain. I try to make this show life's user manual, but it's true. Life doesn't come with a user manual, which is why BetterHelp is here. Again, BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Welcome back. Going to get right into the next message here. See if I can fit it into the second segment here. This person wrote, what did this person write? Right here. I have been binge listening to all your podcasts. They have helped me so much. I'm eternally grateful to you. There's some gratitude. Thank you so much for those words. I appreciate you. You have helped me sort out so much junk in my mind. I can't thank you enough. You're one of the best friends I have ever known. Wow, even though we haven't met. As I work on myself, there is one thing that never seems to resolve. A lot of my problems in my life started in childhood when I was physically and emotionally abused by my father. At times, a bad memory of the abuse will bubble up to my conscious mind, and I feel a lot of anger, fear, and anxiety. I've tried your exercises on this sort of thing, and I think it helps short term because I will feel better for a little while, but perhaps a month goes by and the feelings come back. I don't know if I have processed and released these bad memories. My father has passed away, and I actually haven't faced up to this abuse and what it has done to me until last year, which was about a year after his death. When I was a child and teenager, if I tried bringing this up, he would blame me and invalidate my feelings. And as an adult, I never talked to him about it. I have dealt with alcohol abuse through my teen and adult years and trying to deal with feelings of depression and anxiety that stemmed from the abuse. I'm in my 40s now. I have taken control of the alcohol abuse, but I can't stop this anger at him. How can I resolve this? Any insight from you is appreciated. Thank you for your time. This is a huge, huge struggle. I understand the conflict that you're going through. Yes, thank you so much for sharing this. I'm so sorry you're dealing with this. And it is a very deep, probably complex issue inside of you, because here you have someone that's supposed to show up as your supporter, where you can do no wrong because they're your parents. That's the ideal, where the parent sees their children as not being able to do anything wrong. So they are unconditionally loving. You know, they are loving their children. But not all parents show up like that. This is what you're describing, as somebody who definitely is not showing up in a way that makes you feel worthy and lovable and significant. Just like the stuff I was talking about in the first segment. If you don't feel those things from an important person in your life, a parent, you know, this is what happens, is that we tend to seek these things from our parents, but some parents can't show up in the way that we need them to. And so this is where sometimes we have to do self-parenting or find other mentors in our life. And this isn't the answer. I know this is not something I'm just saying, this is all you need to do, but this is one component of healing, is understanding that sometimes we have to be the person that somebody else couldn't be in our life. And that can start the healing process, but it isn't necessarily the totality of healing that you need to go through. But yeah, you start by saying, hey, if I was my own parent, what would I say to myself, to me over there, you know, as my child over there? If I was my own father, what would I say to me? What would I want to hear? This is very much self-parenting, because some parents don't know how to show up, or they show up in ways that are abusive because they operate differently. They have their own thing going on. They don't know what it takes to be a kind, a loving, compassionate person. And, you know, we could look at that two ways. Well, they were abused too. We could look at it that way, but how does that help you? How does it help you to think, well, they were abused too? It might help you. It might help you to think, well, they were hurt, and hurt people hurt people. So therefore, when they abused me, I can be a little bit more compassionate. That's hard to do. Frankly, that's damn hard to do with some people. Yeah, so what? You were abused too, but your abuse isn't you abusing me. Your abuse was you being abused, and you have to deal with that. But now you're bringing all this unhealed trauma in your life into my life, or you did in your case. He brought all that unhealed trauma from his life into your life. It's definitely unhealed trauma, because who abuses voluntarily? Who thinks that it's pleasurable to do that? There's got to be something different about them, or something unhealed, for someone to want to hurt someone else, because we are hardwired to treat each other more kindly and more respectfully. We are hardwired to be socially connected to each other. We need each other in a lot of ways. We need each other. So for someone to alter from that course, something happened. Something is different about them. And we have to see that they're different. They're not I don't want to say normal, but they're not exactly healthy. They're not exactly a healthy person. They are more toxic. They are abusive. And some people, yes, they are conditioned that way. Some people are born with a proclivity to be a certain way. It's in their genes, it's in their upbringing, it's conditioning, of course. And there's all kinds of things you can look at. But when it comes down to it, how does that change how you feel to this person who wrote, she can't get rid of the anger? This is where I go with this. First of all, don't. What? Yeah, don't. Don't get rid of the anger. You need to be angry. The anger is attached to thoughts and emotions and unhealed trauma inside of you. And that anger needs to maybe go deeper. Maybe you need to reach in even more. Maybe you need to hate. Maybe you need to imagine him being tortured, hit, smacked, killed in your mind. I mean, this is probably controversial, but this is what I do. I will absolutely put them through the ringer in my mind, depending on how angry I am. And I will allow myself to feel and think things that may be immoral, unethical, and maybe even hurtful. I might be the person who hurts back. All in my mind. And maybe these are the exercises that you tried. But this is what I start to do. I start to actually allow myself to feel things that I may not normally want to feel. And I allow myself to think things that I may not normally want to think. I visualize me hurting the other person, if that's what comes to mind. I think what stops a lot of healing, in some cases, is that something comes to our mind, some thought, some hurtful thought, some hateful thought, some evil thought, and we think, I shouldn't think that way. I shouldn't think like that because he was hurt too. And so I want to be a little bit more compassionate. I want to show that person compassion. I say, hell no, don't show that person compassion. If you're feeling it, you need to feel it. You need to get in touch with it. You need to reach down and connect with it. There's a part of you that is unhealed, that really needs closure, and you can't get it because something is stopping that from happening. There's a lack of closure inside of you, and when you remember this past, and this past is just haunting you, and it's bringing up some more trauma and more PTSD, which is very serious. I mean, I'm not saying don't go to therapy. You definitely want to talk to somebody about this, but if you're not talking to somebody, or if you're in between talking to people, this is where I go. You have to reach inside and realize that there might be more in there that you don't want to address, that you don't want to touch upon, that you don't want to connect with, that you don't want to admit. I mean, I've talked to sexual abuse survivors who are, they feel shame because they actually found some pleasure where they feel like they shouldn't have. And that's a terrible place to be because someone abused these people as a child, these, you know, children, and they had some feelings of pleasure because the places they were abused were pleasure areas of the body. And so this toxic mix inside of them, the feelings and the emotions and the pleasure and the pain and the hate and the hurt and the shame, it's all wrapped in there. It's all bundled together. And it's so hard to process because what does that mean if I felt any pleasure? Does that mean I liked it? Does that mean I welcomed it? Does that mean I really wanted it when I thought I didn't? No, it just means that there was some pleasure if, you know, this is what this person felt. Not everyone feels pleasure. Some people definitely do not. But the people who did, who felt shame about it, I'm here to say that, yeah, you might have been activated in a certain way because those were pleasure points on the body. And sometimes that happens, even during abuse, even during the trauma, the sexual trauma. It can and does happen. And a lot of people have felt shame around that. And I'm here to tell you that the body works as it does. It's designed to do that. There's no shame in the body working that way. It just does. The shame is on their side. They should feel shameful for doing it to the children and, you know, other people, the people who do these things. They should feel the shame. They should carry that shame. Not the person who got victimized. The person who got victimized is a victim. They were suffering. They were under the control and the power of someone who definitely did not have their best interest in mind. They should not have done that to anyone. They should not have done that to anyone. They need to heal themselves. They need to work on themselves. And the victims of their behavior shouldn't have to go through shame, shouldn't have to hide how they really feel. You know what? I'm angry and I want that person dead. This might be a thought that goes through someone's mind that when they think it, they stop themselves. And there's many reasons we stop ourselves. We stop ourselves because, A, we don't want to think that way. We don't think that it's a good thing to think that way. We don't think it's moral or of our religious belief or something else. We just don't think it's a good idea. We just don't think it's healthy. We think it's like a mental issue. Like if we think that way, then I'm just as bad as them. I guarantee you will never be as bad as that. Someone who does that to someone else They need help. You need help in a different way. You know, if you're listening to this and you've been sexually abused, this is what I'm talking about, is that you definitely need help in a different way, but not the kind of help they need. They have their own shame to deal with. You shouldn't have to feel that shame, even though I can't say just don't feel it. I know it's there for a lot of people. I know it's there. But you have every right to feel the way you feel and to think the way you think. And when these thoughts come to your mind, don't resist them. Allow them to blossom in your mind. You know, this is your mind. You can do anything you want. You can say anything you want. You can think anything you want. And if you are afraid of doing that, remember, what you resist persists and amplifies. So let's just say that I had these thoughts about my stepfather. I wish he was dead. I wish he was dead. Let's just say those thoughts came to my mind. Should I stop them? No. If they're there, that's what needed to happen. Those are the thoughts that have been rolling around inside my head. So let's let them come up. Okay. What would that be like? How is he going to die? How do I want him to die? Do I want to kill him? This is just in my mind, in your mind. This is just visualizations. These are just things that we may resist inside of ourselves. And our resistance, if we resist it, if I say, no, I can't hate because hating is wrong, what's going to happen is that that is going to amplify the resistance inside of me. It's going to create a conflict and a struggle inside of me, and it's not going to go away. I won't get closure. I won't be allowed to think something because I stop myself from thinking something, and that creates a conflict inside of me. And so instead of doing that, I'm going to allow myself to think that. It's immoral. So what? It's illegal. So what? It's all these things. And if we don't allow ourselves to think them, they won't go away. And that's where I lead. You know, this is where I'm leading you, is that if we don't allow ourselves to think and feel as deep as it needs to go, as awful as it might feel to think and feel those things, because we think we are the awful person for thinking and feeling those things. If we don't allow it to go there, it stays there. But if we allow it to go there and even further, and whatever our brain is coming up with, whatever thoughts and feelings and visions and what we hear, all this stuff inside of our mind, if we don't allow those things to come up, they stay inside. Because what we resist persists and amplifies. And if we resist it, it amplifies, meaning it just gets stronger. The thoughts and feelings get stronger, and I'm not able to get rid of this anger. And I can't feel hate because it's not right. I don't want to feel hate because I don't want to be a hateful person. This is what happens, is that when we allow ourselves to feel the deepest emotions, the deepest hurt, the deepest suffering, what we do is allow ourselves to finally release it. But releasing only comes at the expense of allowing it to exist. It's like telling yourself it's okay to feel this way for the next 10 seconds, for the next 10 minutes, for the next year. It's okay. I'm going to feel this way until I don't need to anymore. I'm going to feel angry until I don't need to anymore. Well, what are you angry about? And then this is where you list it, you know, in your mind or on paper. What are you angry about? Why do you hate this person so much? Why do you want to kill this person? Why do this? Why that? You may not want to write that down, but you know what I'm saying? You want to visit these darker places in your mind, and you want to make sure that it gets expressed somehow. Even if you never say it, even if you allow it just to be inside your mind and visualize what you might do. Now, I'm saying all this with a huge, huge disclaimer that if you have dark thoughts and you are prone to acting on those dark thoughts, you don't want to do this. You don't want to take this exercise and go do the things that you're thinking about. I know I'm speaking to a smart person here. I know that you're listening now and you're thinking, of course, I'm not going to do that. But if I don't have the disclaimer and somebody does it, you just want to talk to someone that will help you through these dark thoughts if you're not able to handle them, because some people aren't. Some people cannot handle the darker thoughts. But I have a feeling that most of the people that listen to this show, they are emotionally intelligent and they understand that emotions have to be dealt with, and they're not prone to any type of behavior that might be illegal, unethical, immoral, and so on. They're not prone to that behavior. They're not going to do the behaviors that they're thinking about. And this is what I'm talking about. That's why I'm telling you this. This is why it might be risky to tell another audience this stuff. It might be risky. And it is risky. It is risky telling you, because somebody might be hearing this for the first time saying, what? Why are you saying this? This is so dangerous. You're being irresponsible. You're not doing the right thing. And with certain people, you're right. This is not good advice for certain people who might act upon these things. But this is the show about reflection, about going within, about connecting with yourself and connecting with that part of yourself that really needs to be expressed and not repressed. Any thoughts you have shouldn't be suppressed. They should be expressed inside, you know, not to the people that are dangerous to you. If this person's father was still alive, I wouldn't say go express everything to this person, because her father has clearly shown that he is not a healthy person. He has shown that his goal is to either make her feel not worthy, not lovable, or bully and intimidate her, obviously traumatize her in many ways. That was what he did. That was what he is used to doing. That his, maybe how he was treated or how he learned to treat others, doesn't matter where he got it or why he got it. It's how he treats this person. And because he treats that person, he cannot be the person that defines someone else's worthiness or lovableness, because he is not well. He's just not well. And so we can't look to him to get what we want, you know, if he were alive. Can't look to him to get what you want, because you're not going to get it. Now, an interesting thing happens when someone dies. After their death, we still have, you know, in this case, an open loop. We still have unfinished business. And that unfinished business can stay unfinished unless we do something about it. And one of my processes is just to talk to them after they're dead. If this sounds a little weird, it is. And you're talking to them after they died, and we find out where they are with things and how they feel about things. And quite often, they're a different person. Quite often, they have changed. Not all the time. Some people are who they are and they'll never change. But often, I've heard this, when somebody does this exercise, they'll talk to the person who has died, and in their mind's eye, they hear that person respond. Like, I'll talk to my stepfather when he dies, I'm sure, and maybe resolve some things. Because I really don't know what I'm going to feel when he dies. It's really odd. It's a trauma bond, because I was raised by him for many, many years. So I have this weird feeling of connection and, dare I say, love for him, even though I can't stand to be around him and I don't want him in my life. But it's just a weird mix. So I think that is a trauma bond that I'll only experience the length or the breadth of that after he dies, because then it's real and it's in my face and now I have to experience it. And I might have to go through these exercises myself, because the people that are here today doing all these human things, everything we do on earth, we can drink, we can smoke, we can eat, we can have sex, we can beat each other up, we can abuse people, we can do anything that is available on earth. Choosing to do the right thing and choosing to do the nice thing and the respectable thing is a great way to live, but some people don't. Some people choose wrong, in my opinion. They choose things that are hurtful. But when they die, those choices change. You know, some people believe we wink out, some people believe we go to heaven, some people believe other things. Some people believe we go back into the stars and reincarnate, whatever. There's all kinds of beliefs out there, whatever works for you. But I can still say that you can go into your mind and talk to them after they die and get an idea of where they are now. Maybe ask them questions. Maybe ask them why. Why did you do this to me? That was so awful. I hate you. Why did you do this? And you'll learn what they're thinking, because they're going to respond. I mean, even a look is a response. And you'll get to say anything you want to say to them. You'll get to say what's on your mind. You'll get to do anything you want to do to them. Maybe you're going to, you know, punch them in your mind's eye, whatever. It's all in your mind. It's all good. It's all safe in there. But the reason the reason I'm giving you permission to do this is because it's in your mind and you are reaching down and accessing what you really think and feel, what's going to happen is that these thoughts and feelings that you maybe didn't want to have or don't think you should have, they disappear. This is why if you allow something without resisting it, if you allow this thought or this feeling to come up inside of you, that it will finally have a place to go instead of staying inside of you. And this is where it can be therapeutic. It can be very healing to allow these things to come up and out of you so that you finally get rid of it because you might have held on to it for so long. And so to this person who wrote, yeah, you might have anger, but what is that anger covering? What else is in there? Is there sadness? Is there defeat? Is there a sense of powerlessness? And when was your power taken from you? And what do you want to say about that? How do you feel about that, if that's the case? What else is in there? Because there's probably more than I'm willing to bet that either is way down and you're having trouble accessing it, or you don't remember and that's driving you crazy because you want to remember. But just access the emotions. How do you feel? And whatever thoughts come up from that, allow them to be. And again, if you can't do this on your own, definitely find someone to talk to about this, because whatever's in there, whatever's very deep, is still in there. It hasn't been released. And I believe that starting to release it is starting to allow it, not resist it. Accept that it's in there and be okay that you are allowed to feel that way. You know, allow yourself to feel these things, allow yourself to think these things, and let those thoughts and feelings come up. If you can talk to someone, great. If you can do it in your mind, in a room by yourself, if you need to punch a pillow or scream in your car, these are the things that you might need to do. And you just have to keep digging until you get to the point where maybe you're exhausted. I've done enough. I've reached in enough. I've accessed everything and I still can't find it. Or I still can't resolve this. Then at that point, you just write down, what are you angry about? Seriously, what are you angry about? I'm angry about a lot. And I have every right to feel angry. That's what I want you to say. I have every right to feel this way. I have every right to feel the way I do and think the things I'm thinking about you. And then just go off if you have to. Go off in your mind or go off out loud somewhere where you feel safe doing so. This is very deep and this may not be enough for you. I know. I realize that. That's why I keep telling you that this may be something you need to talk to somebody about. But this is the process that I go through. This is what I need to do. If I just can't get rid of it, I just imagine that person in front of me, dead or alive, and say what I want to say and do what I want to do and have all those thoughts come up and express them, get in touch with them. And even if I feel like I shouldn't think those things or feel those things, I do anyway. Because if I don't allow it, they stay inside. I am so grateful that you wrote this and you reached out and shared this with me. It is a very difficult situation for you. I understand that. And it could be very traumatic for you. But I want you to heal. I want you to get better. And this is the path I like to take. And I'm suggesting this as a possible path that you can take as well. Thank you again for writing. I do wish you much healing and strength through this. Thanks for listening to another episode. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons of the week, Leela, Christy, Adriana, Anna, Veronica, Holly, Chelsea, Deborah, and Allison. I am so grateful for all of you. I am verbally thanking you. I am very happy that you support the show. I am very grateful, and I am not worthy. I'm trying to be grateful and show you gratitude because that's what we talked about in segment one, and I'm probably pushing it a little too much. So thank you. I appreciate you. These are the patrons I talk about every week, new names every week, and sometimes I repeat those names as they continue to give. If you are a patron, thank you for your support. They provide monthly support to the show, and that keeps us going. I am grateful. And if you value the show like these patrons do, you can give back if you are in a position to do so over at moretob.com, and you have some options over there. Thank you, patrons. I appreciate all of you. And if you want a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, visit loveandabuse.com. That's where I talk about emotional abuse, control, manipulation, and how to get through those situations with those people. It can be very helpful if you're in a situation like that. Loveandabuse.com. And if you know you're the difficult one in the relationship, head over to healedbeing.com, and I teach you how to love in the most healthy way possible and take control and manipulation and emotional abuse out of the relationship. Healedbeing.com. And thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And just a final note on that last segment. The person who wrote that, they wrote it like almost a year ago. And they made a donation once to the show. And I never got a chance to read their message. But when they made the donation, I recognized the name. I looked it up. And I realized, oh, wait, I know this person, and here's their letter. I never got a chance to read it, which is why I read it. And there's a couple reasons I couldn't address it back then. One of them, it's a very difficult topic. It's a very difficult topic to have someone that experienced abuse a long time ago, and they still can't get past it. My girlfriend went through sexual trauma as a child, and I've actually had her on the show a couple times. I don't know if you've ever heard those episodes, but we talked about that. We talked about childhood sexual abuse, and I'm not saying that this person who wrote experienced that at all. It could have been just non-sexual abuse, but it's still a violation. It's still a penetration of the soul, if not physical, spiritual, or soul level a penetration. I don't mean this in a religious sense. It's just like it hits you at such a deep point inside of you, especially when you're a child, when you're powerless, when you rely on the protection and the love and the support from your parents, the two closest people that are supposed to be your closest people in your life, if they're, you know, in your life. Sometimes they're not, but this is what they're supposed to show up as, this unconditionally loving people that will guide you through life, protect you in life. And when they don't show up that way, or worse, they show up as the opposite of that, it screws you up. I don't mean to say you're a screw up. I'm saying it can really mess with your mind. It really messes with your mind. Since I was one, I was around an alcoholic, and not just an alcoholic, an abusive alcoholic, a dangerous alcoholic. And that messed with my mind. It screwed me up. It created so many dysfunctions in me. Not everyone ends up dysfunctional. Not everyone ends up toxic like I was. I was toxic. I was dysfunctional. I was not a healthy partner in relationships. Because what was my reference? My reference growing up was a dysfunctional, toxic, dangerous person. How does a child even process that stuff? They do their best because we're wired to survive. This is what we do, is we are in childhood and we are wired to survive, and we just want to make it through without pain. We just want to know that we're lovable, but we don't even feel that sometimes in certain upbringings. Some children do not feel lovable, so they go to these survival states just to get through the next day. And it's so sad. I feel awful just saying this stuff. It's so sad because I know it happens. Children are in situations where they can't do anything about it, and they're getting hurt or abused or worse, and they can't do anything about it. So they just survive and they do their best. And what ends up happening is as they reach maturity and as they reach their teenage years and as they grow up and leave their home, if this is where it's happening, what ends up happening is they have these ideas about life and perceptions about people and what you're supposed to do. And some people just go around with these different ideas of how to behave. And then they get into relationships and they think that's how you're supposed to behave, but maybe it's dysfunctional. Maybe it's toxic. Maybe it's affecting you at the deepest level. If you're the child that went through this, it's affecting you so much that you feel depressed, that you can't get past anger, like that person in the last segment. You can't get past certain emotions. And it's so hard because you can't live because your life today is based on everything that happened. Everything that's happened to you in the past is what you're going through today. It's like a constant state of PTSD. I'm still experiencing everything I experienced, except now that I'm an adult, I am rationalizing things. I am doing behaviors in a way that are maybe more acceptable, but are still dysfunctional. We change in ways to fit adult situations, but we still carry old traumas and unhealed wounds that we need to heal. And so what do? We're constantly focused on what happened instead of what we're going to do. This happened, this happened, this happened. It's hard to look to tomorrow and say, well, tomorrow I'm going to feel better. I mean, a lot of people can't do that. Tomorrow I'm going to feel better because tomorrow also brings what I felt today and what I felt yesterday. And it's very hard to get past that. So I'm just trying to help you understand that it's normal to feel this way. It's normal to have all of these thoughts. And if you think that you should be past these thoughts or past these feelings, don't put yourself down. Don't beat yourself up. Sometimes we can't get past it. Sometimes we can't get past what happened in our past. And that's okay, even though it sucks. But it's okay because I don't want you to feel shameful. I don't want you to feel like it's never going to end, because it will. It will. It just takes work. It takes understanding that you may have some deeper stuff in there that needs to come out. You need healing. You need to heal. And you need to be okay inside yourself, comfortable in your own skin, knowing that you are worthy. I'm going to repeat this over and over again. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are significant. You are important. You are an important person in this world. And if you don't see it, I am here to reflect it back to you, because that is what I see in you. And some people have written to me saying, you don't know me. You don't know who I am. You don't know what I'm capable of. You don't know what I've done. I know that you've listened this far. And that if you're listening to a show like this, damn, that's awesome, because I know that you want to improve yourself. And I'm not saying, damn, I'm great, this is why you're listening. No, damn, that's awesome, because that means you're trying to heal. You're trying to improve yourself. Do you know how many people don't? They don't try to improve themselves. They just move on through life thinking, nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. I'm just going to keep moving forward. I'm okay. Nothing wrong with me. But here you are. You're trying to work on yourself. You're trying to heal yourself. You're trying to improve yourself or learn something new. How many people don't want to learn anything new? A lot of those too. But you're here trying to improve yourself. And as long as you're always walking in this direction, you have forward momentum. Forward momentum is all it takes to continue healing and growing and learning and evolving and changing and moving into the new you that you want to be. So when somebody writes to me and says, you don't know me, how do you know that I'm great? How do you know that I'm lovable? How do you know that I'm worthy? Because you're trying, damn it. Who tries? The people that try are the ones that are the best kind of people to be around, because they are not closed-minded. They are open-minded. They want to improve themselves because they know they still have work to do. It's very hard to be around people who are closed-minded and believe they have no work to do. Unless they don't. Maybe they don't. But are they arrogant? Are they mean? Are they pushy? Are they know-it-alls? I'm not putting anyone down. I'm just asking, because some people, you meet them and they think, I don't need any help. I'm fine. But then they're mean. If you're mean, you probably need some help. You probably need to work on something. If you're pushy and you're arrogant and you're, who knows, you're all kinds of things that maybe you don't want to be around. Other people don't want to be around. If you're one of those that, you know, closed-minded, I don't have to work on myself, and nobody likes to be around you, then you might have some work to do. You might have something to do. I'm not saying that nobody can reach the pinnacle of self-improvement and now they're done. I'm not saying that you can't do that, but usually, as a human being on this earth, if you're done and there's not much left to do, what's next? That's not always the best when you have nothing else to work on, unless, you know, you're working for a company and you're done with your day and you don't want any more work that day. But what about self-improvement? What about feeling better inside yourself? If you're done and you feel great every day and you have no angry thoughts and people don't bother you and you have a lot of love in your life and a lot of people care about you and nobody's out there to hurt you, if you aren't experiencing any challenges whatsoever, then kudos. You have blown my mind, and my mind only gets blown when I think that people want to hang around me. But this is where I go, is that if you're there, then you don't need a show like this and you're not listening. But if you're not, then you're trying and you're improving and you're always doing something to show up in the world as the best version of you. And when you show up as the best version of you, it's going to improve the next day and the next day and the next day. So we always get a better version of you every next day. Even if it's one tiny baby step that you took that improved your life, made you slightly happier, made you slightly less sad, made you slightly less angry or more. Maybe you're more angry, and that's not always a bad thing, because where are you going? You're accessing something deeper that maybe you needed to access in order to be able to let it go. There's a lot to thank yourself for trying to work on things. This show is, there is try and there is do. Yes, I want you to try, because if you're not trying and you can't do, where are you? Where are you if you don't try and you can't do? That's hard. I can't do. I tried that. Well, this is why we keep trying. We keep trying and we keep working and we keep moving in that direction, so we have just a tiny bit of forward momentum. As long as you have a tiny bit of forward momentum, you're always moving forward. And you deserve a pat on the back for that. You are worthy. You are lovable. You are important. You are significant. And I am so grateful that you exist in my life. Always keep an open mind and step into your power. That helps you be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.